From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 573, Azure Data Factory with guest Kam Kirkov, recorded Monday, January 22nd, 2018. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Tom Kirkhoff, who works for Codit as an Azure consultant. He's a Microsoft Azure MVP and Azure advisor. He turns coffee into scalable and secured cloud systems and writes about his adventures at blog.comkirkhoff.be. Welcome, sir. I've had you over on the Donna Rock side before, but first time on Run As, so welcome.
Thank you, Richard. Glad to be here.
Yeah, good to chat with you. We always sort of, we've done a couple of DNRs together. They've been right on the edge of this is IT, this is dev, like the thinking more about architectural elements and services from Azure, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So you want to talk about data factories today?
Yes.
I thought that's what our businesses were. I thought our businesses were the data factories.
Yeah, well, it's a service that's becoming more and more important. So I think it's time to talk about it.
Not going
to
disagree with you, sir. So what are we talking about here? What is this about?
Well, back in the day, we typically had one data store, probably a SQL. And if you were lucky, then you also had a SQL data warehouse, but I think that was about it.
Yeah, expensive to have both, but you know.
Yeah, nowadays we have a data store that fits our needs, which means that we have a variety of them with different schemas and different data sets everywhere. But we need to have a mechanism to basically orchestrate the movement and the molding, cleansing of the data. We basically need to create these data pipelines where we orchestrate our whole data infrastructure. And that's where Data Factory comes in.
It feels to me like you're describing SSIS, integration services.
Mm-hmm. But in the cloud.
Okay. And maybe a little broader than just SQL, because odds are you've got some kind of NoSQL data store. You're certainly still dealing with log files and text source and stuff. That never has gone away.
Well, basically, you can have a variety of data stores, not only limited to the Microsoft ones, which is a big plus. And you can also basically run compute on top of them. So think Hadoop, Azure Data Lake Analytics, nice. All these kinds of things can be used as well. So basically, you can create these whole end-to-end processes that you can schedule and run them every X amount of time.
Is it really about populating warehouses?
You can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
You can export data from a file store into a data warehouse, or you can basically enrich your data with an external data source. If it's related to data and an automated process, it's basically possible almost.
Now, I've done shows around data lakes and sort of the data warehouse and the cloud discussion in general, and they all had ETL processes. Is this just bigger or more, or is it they put it in one place?
I think it's more of, you can see it as ETL, but also more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fully cloud native. Well, it was born in the cloud, but actually it has a hybrid model as well, where you can basically create these hybrid pipelines. You can move your data from on-prem to the cloud or vice versa. So I think it's beyond basic ETL.
So I can take stuff that I have on-premise from where? From SQL Server?
SQL Server, I think even a Mongo or something.
Okay.
I think today they have up to 65 stores that they support.
Import sources.
Right.
But this really is directly related to integration services. Like you can take SSIS packages you built on-premise and move them here.
Yeah. So initially they had the Azure Data Factory V1, but recently they announced Azure Data Factory V2, which is basically what V1 had to be. So basically a matured version, which is more flexible. And as part of that, you can also now just take your existing SSIS packages you used to run on premises and run them in the cloud for you.
So this is a new capability. It's a V2 capability.
Yes.
Although I always laugh when we have version numbers in the cloud, right? Like they're always rolling new features out.
They don't give it the number, but that's how I typically call it, because it's basically a completely new version with basically a whole feature set added to it.
Nice. Okay. So the original version did not have the SSIS link. It sounds like the SQL team came to play in version 2 and brought in a lot of this capability. Because, you know, the thing I liked about SSIS more than anything was not its ability to import data, but its ability to manage data that didn't fit the import rules. Like its exception handling was great.
Yeah. And basically transforming your data sets on the fly without doing any interventions or something.
Right. When you think about all the ETLs you've ever written by hand, you run them and then they fail, like somewhere and then something goes wrong. And that's when you make a tweak to deal with some data condition you haven't thought of. And I always saw SSIS as remarkably tolerant to that it would always finish and just tell you, here's what I successfully, loaded. And here's what I didn't successfully load. And then you could decide, do you want to roll back, make some changes and continue, or just manage that subset of the failed data?
You can basically see the Azure Data Factory as a similar flow where you basically define a process which maps to your business process. And in that pipeline, you have one or more activities which basically take your data set through the whole chain until the end store. And one of the nice things about Data Factory is that it not just works, it also has a nice visual monitoring experience for your operations team. So if something goes wrong, they can clearly see in what activity it failed and why it failed. And then they can basically drill deeper and see how they can fix it before anybody notices it.
Nice. So anyway, I think it's an important part of the equation, just being able to see what's going on. So is this typically time-based? You run it every midnight? What are the other ways to get it started?
Yeah, so in V1, they only supported these data slicing models. So this is like you alluded to, running a pipeline every hour, every day, every X amount of minutes. Sure. And for most of the processes, this was fine. But in some scenarios, you basically want to have it on demand,
right,
or just pass in parameters and run the pipeline based on that.
I've built systems over the years where when a file arrives in this folder, pick it up and put it to work, start processing it. I like that option, that sort of, if you see it, run it.
Yeah. So today, that's not possible yet. So in the future, they will basically have an event-driven model. Mm-hmm. Where I think it will even be based on Azure Event Grid, but that's just an assumption. But basically, when you would upload a new blob to Azure Storage, then it would detect that and automatically kick off a pipeline.
So at this moment, it wouldn't be just dropping a file, but also then like calling some kind of web service that would kick the process off.
Yeah, so you can just use a REST endpoint, trigger it via .NET, PowerShell, or via the monitoring portal, basically.
Okay.
Another addition for the data slicing model was back in V1, you either have to define it for every day or nothing, which is a problem, because for certain processes, you only want it to basically run during the work week.
Sure.
This was not possible, but in V2, luckily, they changed it so that you have more of these advanced calendar options where you can say, okay, this process only needs to run on Friday because our week has ended and we want to calculate the whole amount of sales we made this week and send an email to our CEO, basically, to give him a summary of how we did this week. This is now possible.
Yeah, okay. So a little more of that smart granularity options and how you invoke. I also like stuff like, I only want this to run on the last day of the month. Which is a hard problem because last days move around. Mm-hmm. So, being able to set that constraint. But either way, there's always just a direct invocation, right? What do you call to kick this thing off? Is it just a JSON call of some kind?
Yep.
All right.
Just say, this is my pipeline. If you have some parameters, just pass them as well and say, go for it.
And now I'm tapping my SSIS knowledge here, but is it a sort of a graphical way to draw what the control flow actually looks like? This is the data source. This is how you process it. This is what you do with the ones that work. This is the ones that fail.
Yeah, that's a very important question. So just to give some context again, in V1, this was a bit of a problem because everything over there had to be defined in JSON.
Okay.
And JSON is fine if you know how it works. But if you're new to the technology, it's very hard to basically jump on the Azure Data Factory bandwagon. However, with V2, you now have a UI to do this. So you can basically drag and drop all the data stores, the activities, and how they need to react on each other.
Okay.
Just by dragging these shapes together and linking them. So it's basically defining your orchestration, let's say.
Right.
How does it need to work? Next to the UI, you can, again, still use JSON templates, which you deploy via ARM.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're more of a code guy, you can use other libraries like .NET, PowerShell, Python, or even REST if you want.
Right, so code the way you want to.
Yep.
That's nice.
Exactly. As long as you put it in source control, it's okay for me.
You know, that's the whole thing. More and more, as I'm caring about how these different operations that we do in IT now are source controlled and managed version to version, and more than one person can work on them. You know, we're kind of used to doing this all ourselves or having someone else do it, and you don't share anything.
Yeah, it works. Please don't touch it now.
Yeah, well, that's good.
And to be fair, the UI tooling is also backed by a Git repo and VSTS if you want. So they give you the UI capabilities, but they also think about the source control behind it. So that's a good thing.
Nice.
Yep.
And so you should be going to GitHub to check out stuff around Data Factory. Looks like a bunch of sample apps are here.
Yeah, and in the documentation, you have a couple of walkthroughs as well,
mm-hmm.
where they walk you through certain scenarios like how do I copy my data, how do I enrich it, etc. And the UI experience also has some walkthroughs on this. So they basically just show you around to get you started, which is also very nice.
Well, because this, you know, it's one thing to build it. It's another thing to run it day in to day. And then when something goes wrong, say, well, what went wrong? What do we do now? So all of that visualization side
mm-hmm.
is going to save us a lot of grief when it comes to actually working on it.
Yeah. And that's actually something that I've been a very big fan of for Data Factory is the UI aspect I mentioned for mm-hmm. monitoring, because that's something Azure Data Factory does really nice to show you where it failed. While other services like Azure Functions could really learn about this and basically give me an overview of all the functions I have and where do they connect to. And that's what I'm missing with these other services. While Azure Data Factory already shows you this and it's really nice.
Great. Yeah, no, I like a good workflow just because you can see what's going on and you know when something fails what it was. Certainly, I've had that experience, like you said, with some of the serverless stuff like Logic Apps where something failed. We just don't know where.
No. Good luck.
Yeah. You got to sort of dig your way through it. It's kind of the unreproducible failure. And then you run it again and it works just fine. You're like, oh, I don't know what happened.
But it works now. Let's move on.
We're just going to look away. Everything's fine. I'm fine. No big deal. Oh, my goodness. We're being a little cynical here, Tom.
Yeah. It's funny because it's true.
Yeah, it's only funny because it's true. And you better give me one second here for this very important message. This episode of Run As is brought to you by SQL Intersection. 8 full-day workshops and over 40 technology-focused sessions make SQL Intersection a unique source of the best information around SQL Server from real-world consultants and members of the SQL Server team. You'll learn proven problem-solving techniques and technologies you can implement immediately, as well as learn about the future of SQL Server. Get answers to performance monitoring, troubleshooting, designing for scale and performance, cloud, as well as new features in SQL Server 2016 and 2017. It's time to determine your migration strategy, and SQL Intersection is the place to figure out the best way to do it. Come to SQL Intersection at the Swan Hotel in Orlando, March 25th to 28th. Use code RUNAS to get your discount on your registration at SQLIntersection.com, and we'll see you there. And we're back. Richard Campbell here with Tom Kirchhoff. It's a little Run As Radio talking about Azure Data Factories. Now in a preview version of version 2 with some cool new capabilities. I noticed also support for the Azure Key Vault. So no embedding of license codes and logins into your packages.
Oh, yes. So I'm really glad about this because now they really thought through to provide security by default.
Right.
Where every Data Factory instance you provision also creates an Azure AD application
okay.
in your default directory. And this enables you to basically give a data factory instance access to your key vaults and just say, okay, if I need to connect to my database, go fetch the connection string to this secret.
Right.
If I need to connect to Azure Data Lake stores, just connect with this AD application. Mm-hmm. You've got the permissions. So this is really nice.
Yeah, I know. And it's the right way to do things. I want every Azure feature to go to the credential stores for any credential it needs. Never, ever. I don't need an alternative. That should be all the things.
Yeah, exactly. And certainly if you are doing automatic key rolling mm-hmm. with the Azure Key Vault, it's important because if you don't have a key vault, you need to basically redeploy your linked service every time.
Right.
While if Azure Data Factory just goes and fetches the latest secrets, you're good to go. And then you can build these really secure systems.
Yeah, no, and that's just the right way to go. How does the app get permission to even speak to the key vault?
That's a manual process, of course.
Okay.
Then the administrator basically needs to say, okay, this Azure Data Factory instance is allowed to get the secrets from this vault.
Right. So the service profile that runs the Azure Data Factory instance has the privilege. It's not necessarily mapped to the administrator. You don't have to run this from the administrator. You can invoke it other ways.
So this is something you can basically just chain in your ARM template and link the access policy to your newly created Azure Data Factory instance.
Right. Now, you described a scenario where we're actually going all the way down to, you know, generating a report to go to a CEO. So when I think the data factory, I think of it just as a way to take raw data and put it into a data store that might subsequently then run reports. But would the insourcing of the data actually go all the way through to generation and emailing, or is that a different service?
Well, I think it all depends on the business case.
Sure.
But the first step would be to see what do I need to automate and which orchestrator will I use?
Mm-hmm.
Because in Azure, there are a couple of them.
Yep.
Where for the people who are familiar with Azure Logic Apps will say, I can do almost half of this, at least with Logic Apps.
Right.
How are they different? And that's a good question, because in Azure, a lot of these scenarios where these services basically have a lot of overlap, but some parts are not overlapping.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, when should I use Azure Logic Apps and when Data Factory, and what's the difference? Well, actually, I think they are a perfect match to basically use them together, because one, they are both serverless orchestrators.
Yes.
Where you define a workflow. So that's basically the similarity. But where Logic Apps is your app-centric integration, let's say. So mm-hmm. basically your BizDoc in the cloud.
Yep.
Data Factory is more focused on the data part.
Right. So you may be talking about data stores that run across many different applications.
Yep.
But you have a common workflow from the data store perspective for ingesting data or organizing data.
Yeah. Or if you need to basically prepare data and after that do some business process on top of it, you mm-hmm. can basically have a pipeline, make the data available, and then call a REST endpoint, which basically triggers your Logic App to take over the rest of the process.
I would have to wonder if a lot of what's in Data Factory is actually like is taking advantage of the Logic App feature set, and it's sort of a superset that it's got these additional things, although it doesn't cover everything.
Yeah, so I don't think they mentioned this somewhere, but I have the same feeling that mm-hmm. it's basically running on the same core infrastructure that basically just dispatches these executions, let's say, and run the workflow for you.
I hope that's true, because that's just logical. I'd hate that they rebuilt a bunch of this stuff. There's so much overlap between what we're describing in data factories and in Logic Apps.
Well, let's hope so, indeed. I wouldn't be amazed.
No, it wouldn't be unprecedented to see somebody reinvent the wheel at Microsoft. Goodness knows.
Maybe they made it better. Who knows?
Yeah, no, well, it's just that now you have a race of feature sets. Like, well, I can do this over in Data Factory, not in Logic Apps. I would hope every time that Logic Apps get its Data Factory gets it automatically. To me, the big thing that's distinctive to Data Factories then is the SSIS import. And generally, it's visualization of monitoring, because Logic Apps generally are not that easy to follow. You end up writing a lot of your own code to see what's going on in your Logic App.
Well, and I think another difference is that Data Factory will will basically be the smart guy for you, where it knows that it needs to copy this big chunk of data, and it will decide on what's the best approach to do this. Will I use just a simple copy? Will it use Polybase to improve the speed or whatever it makes it scalable, right. Let's say.
Yeah, no, I agree that that's absolutely the case. And certainly they're coming at it from a different philosophy. Data Factory sounds like your way to feed your cloud-based data warehouse, where logic apps are much more generalized. You know, the more that biz talky, you've got a transaction, it's got to flow through to several different apps. How do we make that flow work?
And integrate with other systems while the data, while processing the data itself is more for Data Factory.
So can you invoke a Data Factory flow from a logic app?
Yeah. So thanks to the V2, you can.
Okay.
Which is actually, this is something we already have in production, where we have a logic app basically downloading a file every day from an external service.
Mm-hmm.
And making it available to blob storage. And then we had a data pipeline, which is using the data slicing model on that blob storage account. But because we couldn't trigger it automatically, we had to wait until that slicing window was triggered. But now with V2, actually, we could migrate and basically from within the logic app, trigger the pipeline and specify the name of the new file. And basically now have one streamlined process.
Nice. Yeah, no, I think it's neat to see those things working together that way. And it makes a heck of a lot of sense. Because I think logic app's strength is that ability to set a set of business rules across multiple pieces of software.
Yeah, exactly. And actually in V2, they take it a step further. You can not only trigger them on demand, you can now actually handle the outcome of a specific activity. So imagine you're saying, okay, you need to run this stored procedure on MySQL database. And if that finishes, use the result set and put it into a SQL data warehouse. But imagine that stored procedure fails. You would want to basically react on that. So in V2, the result would actually be that your pipeline just failed and you had to just have a look, fix it, and then rerun it.
Right.
In V2, however, you can now basically link a new activity and say, okay, only run this activity if the previous one failed. So what you could do is then basically you could do compensation transactions to revert previous activities so that your data store is going back to its initial state, or basically trigger a logic app to handle this failure, so that an engineer gets notified or something. You can now build these more reactive workflows.
Well, and nothing's more frustrating. Here we had a terabyte of data, and then the first 100 megs, it hit something, and now it's just stopping. I can't do this. Let me know what to do next.
Yeah.
Rather than just to continue on, do what it can do, or have recovery mechanisms of the troubled data. Like, that was, again, one of the things I loved in SSIS. It's like, hey, 95% of this worked. Here's the 5% that didn't, and you have you can build a pipeline for what to do with the 5%.
Yeah, exactly. It's really a nice thing to have. And in addition to that, you can also now do loopings and waiting. So all these more advanced orchestration capabilities, let's say, which is also similar to logic apps, but then again, it's also now in Data Factory.
Yeah, now I appreciate the sentiment that there's a difference between an app-centric workflow and a data-centric workflow. They are different creatures. They're both workflows, and they both need rules. But because data sources are shared across so many different applications, you don't want to embed data-related behaviors in an app necessarily.
Nope. Or they can use one to prepare for the other.
Yeah, they overlap that way too, that you know with a data-related workflow, it's going to impact behavior of certain apps, and they may need to be notified. And app-based workflows impact data. That's inevitable. It makes you wonder if there's other flavors of workflow that we haven't thought about that supersede either of those models.
You can have PowerShell workflows as well in Azure Automation.
Yeah, certainly there's tools that will run different workflows. I'm just thinking about the different scenarios. Like, security is a cross-cutting concern. So, you know, being able to evaluate a security problem or to test things across applications and across data, I think is an interesting problem to explore.
Definitely.
Just getting hooked on this idea of workflow as its own thing and that it's not necessarily bound to any application or any particular data source. Mm-hmm. It certainly needs that Azure Key Vault in the background so that we know where our secrets all live.
Yeah, that's still one of those important services that doesn't get the attention it needs.
I tend to agree, and we have done some shows around it. There's more to do there. And Azure AD as well. It's like you're not going to get very far with any of this tech without taking on Azure AD to some degree.
Yeah, but then you'll need to bring some coffee. Because it tends to get confusing.
Well, especially when you hybridize, right? It's just like, they're all playing together here. What exactly do you want to do? And it feels like Microsoft's not sure either. They're still throwing stuff at the wall with identity in Azure.
Yep, totally agree.
It's not that we don't love you guys. It's that you haven't decided what you're trying to do yet. And we all notice. It's one of those crazy truths. What kind of projects are you doing with Data Factory? You've got a couple of things going on.
So we have some automation, basically, where we need to get data from third parties. Mm-hmm. Basically, then need to map it to our internal data structure.
Right.
And then make it available for another team who can do some intelligent things on top of it. So basically, create an import workflow.
Okay. Yeah. That seems to be the big thing. It's just that import from many different sources and sort of filling a data set in for a data warehouse or some kind of business intelligence tooling.
Yeah. Actually, you could also have other types of workloads where you can every day create aggregates top of your database and make them available in your data warehouse.
So preloading the queries you know people are going to want that are time consuming.
Yeah,
but not so they don't all hit you at 8 o'clock in the morning when people get to work. Been done over time in the wee hours of the morning, so that when 8 o'clock hits, it's fast and you don't bury the system.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. But I think it can do whatever you want, actually.
Yeah, but I've certainly been there where it's like, hey, the whole system drops to its knees as everyone comes in the door and asks for last night's reports. Right? Pre-populate your caches.
Yeah, if I think back to my BizTalk experience, where you have to integrate with a lot of external partners, which all have their exotic data formats. You could have logic apps basically mapping to your internal structure.
Yep.
Make it available to Data Factory and then do the more generic processing on a data level. So.
And manage all that stuff in source code so that it can be revved and you can revert to versions that worked and can assign privileges to different people around them. It's almost like we're grown-ups.
Well, that's actually one thing I'm still missing, which is basically giving a data pipeline a version.
Right.
And introduce correlation IDs so that if I'm using a logic app and I trigger a Data Factory pipeline, that I can correlate this end-to-end into my monitoring experience.
Right. Because you could easily have older and newer pipelines running at the same time, depending on your data sources and what you're loading.
Yeah, exactly. Did it fail because it failed, or did it fail because of the developer that didn't test really thoroughly enough?
Totally. Yeah, I completely agree. And I could see you building up sets of migration scripts and stuff that are going to take a while to mature to do a major migration. And once they're done, they're done. You can archive them and put them away.
Yeah, exactly. So, one important thing that they introduced in Data Factory V2 as well is the concept of an integration runtime, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's basically a unit of compute, which you can run in Azure or on-premises, or an Azure SSIS integration runtime, which is basically handling all the heavy lifting. So if it needs to move the data in that runtime. So imagine that I have one in West Europe and on-premises, and I need to move data from on-premises to the cloud. It will do the copy and the activity dispatching first on-premises and then go to the cloud. So now you can be more flexible in terms of the compute you use, and you can move it as close as you want.
Cool.
So if you need to build these hybrid pipelines, it's really important that you have a look at those, because it also allows you to be more secure and add these integration runtimes into your private networks and such.
And you can pull credentials down out of the Azure Key Vault than you would actually execute in your internal network. There's no equivalent to the Key Vault on premises. Like, it's actually a more secure way to think. Rolling your own is much harder.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting truth. Even if it was an all on-premises execution path, it's still useful to involve the cloud for certain elements.
Yep.
Good stuff, Tom. This is really neat. Thanks for bringing it to our attention. Where can folks learn more about you or where they'll see you on stage or anything fun like that?
You can follow me on my blog, which is blog.tomkerkhove.be, or follow me on Twitter @TomKerkhove.
Tom Kerkhove, thanks very much for coming on the show again.
Thank you for having me.
We'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.